This is Stuart Moxham of The Gist, and you are listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Acra.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. Today on the show, Julia Jorn interviews artist Tristan Fitch. He's now in Catskill, but has ties to the Ensemble Studio Theater, which had a Lexington house in the 1990s. He's also shown work locally in Tivoli, Hillsdale, Phoenicia, Catskill, and other locations. We'll hear his story this hour, and we'll also hear national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Makers Syndicate. And it all begins after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
On air, in air, channel, connection, and the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network, network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network, network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network, network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
Early Electromix is a series to document the history of experimental electronic music from the 50s to the 80s. Pioneers who paved the way for what was to become techno, ambient, electronica, and most of what we are listening to. Essential Culture on air every Tuesday from 11 to 12 a.m.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Greenville Drive-In 32, a destination for movies and music under the stars of the Northern Catskills since 1959. Seasonal programming information at drivein32.com or 518-966-2177.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Glen Falls House in Round Top, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC Newsroom, This is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Andy Cepeda is reporting for the Legislative Gazette that Governor Kathy Hochul last week signed legislation into law mandating that minutes of public meetings be posted online within 14 days of a meeting. The legislation originated with the New York Coalition for Open Government, which reached out to Assemblymember Amy Paulin, who introduced the bill in the Assembly, with Senator Anna Kaplan introducing the bill in the Senate. The new measure is significant because the state's open meeting law does not currently require that meeting minutes be posted online. At present, meeting minutes must be available within 14 days of the meeting at the office of the local government or school board if a person requests a copy. But now government bodies with a regularly updated website must post their minutes online within 14 days of the meeting taking place. In an analysis of 20 local governments conducted by the coalition, only 30% of local governments posted minutes of the previous meeting before the next meeting occurred. The law does allow an exemption if a government body chooses to post a video or audio recording of the meeting itself. This exemption was met with some criticism from the coalition. Coalition President Paul Wolf said, quote, "It is also important to have a written record of meeting attendance, motions made, and votes taken. It is quicker and easier for an organization like ours to monitor compliance with the open meetings law by reviewing meeting minutes or transcripts than it is by viewing several hours of a meeting recording," unquote. Read more about this story in the Legislative Gazette.
Roger Hannigan-Gilson reports in the Times Union that the Chatham Planning Board on November 10th approved the Pavilion Project, developed by Art Omai in Ghent, a 190-acre site with permanent installations of artist work. According to the project description, and I quote, "The premise of the Pavilions Project is that many accomplished and highly distinguished artists would welcome the opportunity to create a legacy standalone exhibition of their work in a setting that they control and help design, but that is also part of a larger art center which provides cultural context, museological standards, and visitor services management," end quote. Up to 18 artists would create enclosed pavilions at the Chatham site that would serve as galleries for their works. Artists would design the structures, which could be up to 5,900 square feet and two stories tall. Art Omai would also build a visitor center, and the nonprofit would maintain roads and grounds and split the cost of constructing the pavilions with the artists. Three artists and one collector have signed up so far: Alice Acock, a New York City-based sculptor, and Rakuku Neaitu, married minimalist, and the collector Ariel Asekis, who founded the Institute for Studies on Latin American Art. Art Omai will begin work on the site off Route 66 in the spring. And you can read more about this story in the Times Union.
Bill Williams is reporting for Columbia Green Media that hundreds of law enforcement officers, family, and friends paid their last respects November 12th to Columbia County Sheriff's Deputy Bernard Allen Roberts. He was 52. The funeral procession was led by the Sheriff's Office Motorcycle Color Guard from the Sacco Funeral Home in Greenport to the Sheriff's Office on Industrial Tract, where the procession stopped so Roberts could receive his final call. They continued back onto Route 66 and over Paul Avenue to the Cedar Park Cemetery in Hudson, where Roberts was laid to rest. He was an 18-year veteran of the Sheriff's Office. Roberts was born August 23, 1969, at Columbia Memorial Hospital in Hudson. After high school, he served in the U.S. Marine Corps. Upon leaving the service, Roberts began his career with the Sheriff's Office. He was found dead by first responders November 7th when they were called to his home in Rensselaer. The cause of death has not been released. Roberts leaves behind his wife, Fulgencia Roberts, and six children. Read more about the story at HudsonValley360.com.
William J. Kimball reports in the Daily Freeman that the Saugerties Village Board has granted an easement to Arm of the Sea Theater for public access to the planned Tidewater Center Performance Campus along the Lower Esophis Creek. The mask and puppet performance troupe, founded in 1982, will build a performance center on a 1.5-acre property at the site of a former paper mill along the creek. The easement previously was as a right-of-way for the Hudson River Sloop Clearwater. The resolution approved by the board states, and I quote, Clearwater Incorporated no longer had a need for such an easement, but Arm of the Sea did, after it contracted to acquire private lands adjacent to the Tina Corvus Park, end quote. The planned Tidewater Center will also include a waterworks playground and public access for fishing and kayaking. The site of the center is under a mile from where the Esopus Creek meets the Hudson River. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman.
Tennessee Crow II reports in the Times Union that another water well in Postenkill in Rensselaer County has tested positive for a toxic forever chemical, county officials announced November 12th. There are now 8 private wells that have tested above the state level of 10 parts per trillion for PFOA or PFOS out of 72 wells with test results so far. Officials are waiting for test results on another 36 wells. State-required testing in January found toxins in wells at the Algonquin Middle School, and the latest sampling results came from sites located north and west of the school. Quote, we can also report the 4 rounds of testing have yet to reveal a source for the contamination, and we are in fact reviewing whether there are multiple sources involved in the Postenkill situation, unquote, Rensselaer County Public Health Director Mary Fran Walshna said. Manufacturing facilities in Hoosick, Hoosick Falls, and Petersburg have previously poisoned wells with forever chemicals, and firefighting foam used in Caro in Greene County and the city of Newburgh have also poisoned local drinking water supplies. Residents in Rensselaer County have formed Concerned Citizens for Clean Drinking Water to share information and advocate for clean drinking water. Quote, the pace of testing has not given us confidence that all parties will determine the source in a timely manner, unquote, said Phil LaRoque, a member of the CCCDW. Read more about the story in the Times Union.
Melanie Lekosevic reports for Capital Region Independent Media that citizens in Coeymans can give their opinion November 22nd about a proposed law in Coeymans allowing cannabis sales but barring cannabis consumption sites. Town Supervisor George McHugh said, and I quote, the local law being proposed would allow for the retail sale and purchase of cannabis in our town outside the boundaries of the village, but it would not allow for the consumption on site, meaning there would be no smoke rooms that you could go to and consume the cannabis once you purchased it, end quote. Local towns have until December 31st to opt out, or else cannabis sales will be allowed after state legislators legalize the drug in April. McHugh said the town wrote the law to mimic one recently passed in Colony. The public hearing will be at 6:30 p.m. November 22nd at Coeymans Town Hall, 18 Russell Street in Ravenna in southern Albany County. Read more about this story at the Ravenna News Herald.
And Tony Dobrowski is reporting for the Berkshire Eagle that the Schaefer family has spent more than $15 million to upgrade the Catamount Mountain Resort since purchasing the ski area 3 years ago. The resort is adding 2 new chairlifts, has put in the resort's first snow tube park, is upgrading the snowmaking system, and has new food options available in a newly renovated lodge. The new chairlifts are expected to be in operation when Catamount opens for the upcoming season. Quote, Mother Nature has the final say on that, unquote, said David Cullis, Catamount's new assistant general manager. Quote, but we are looking at early December. We're probably give or take a month away right now, unquote. Catamount is one of the region's oldest ski areas, having been founded in 1939. It straddles the New York-Massachusetts line with an official street address in Hillsdale. Cullis said the technology of snowmaking has greatly improved. Quote, it's much more energy efficient. A lot of the new snow guns we've purchased are using enhanced technology, so we can use more water and less air. We have the ability to make more snow with less energy, unquote, he said. The new snow tubing park is located near the base of the mountain and has a separate entrance from the main ski area. Read more about this story in the Berkshire Eagle.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
National Weather Service in Albany predicts Monday there is a slight chance of snow showers or rain in the morning. Then it turns partly sunny with a high of just 41 degrees and a low Monday night of around 30 is predicted. And again, there's a chance of rain and snow showers before 8 p.m. and slight chance until 1 a.m. Tuesday it should be mostly sunny with a high of 42 and a low around 30. And Wednesday should be mostly cloudy with a high near 47 and a low around 40. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears. You have tuned into all sorts of creative community voices on the radio Monday, November 15th on WGXC, including at 11 a.m. We're live from Hudson with Brendan Donegan, who's telling part two of his sonic biography, featuring music from his teenage years, this time at 11 a.m. And then at noon, it's time for the Deep Threes show after the local news, with tracks from Carla Bley, Steve Roach, and Aphex Twin, among others, today. At 10 p.m., we have a special new show on the radio at WGXC. It's called The Mosquito. It comes live from the Worthy Soundworks in Catskill and is hosted by Nancy Giles and Carmen Borgia with all sorts of stand-up comedy, music, discussion, and more. That's The Mosquito at 10 p.m. tonight on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Get a local event mentioned on All Together Now. Go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
The Museum of Firefighting in Hudson holds a fire truck Pinewood Derby race Saturday, November 20th from 10:30 a.m. until noon. That's at the Museum of Firefighting, 1117 Harry Howard Avenue in Hudson. You can call 518-822-1875, extension 17, for more information. And also go to the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org for this and many other local events.
Steve Roach spent the waning days of 2014 in the studio, crafting a piece of ambient music, and we'll hear his creation on the next Deep Threes. Plus music from Ciolina, Trokai, Carla Bley, and Robert Spring. Deep Threes, music beyond boundaries for a digital world.
Tune in to Deep Threes after the noon news on Monday at WGXC 90.7 FM.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Monday, November 15th. We are 87.4% of the way through the year, 36 days left until winter. We see the coldest thermometer this morning is in Mackey at 32 degrees, and the warmest is 36 in Oak Hill. It's going to be moderately cloudy today with a high of 47 at 3 p.m. There will be a chance of passing rain this afternoon between 2 and 4 p.m. Overnight temperatures fall to 31 degrees. Tomorrow will be a little sunnier with a high of 48. Tuesday night we get down to the upper 20s before a high of 49 on Wednesday. Thursday will have a high of 63 and will bring rain back to the area. The hottest temperature expected this week is 64 degrees. The coldest temperature expected is 27 degrees. Today's closest expected snowfall is on our local mountains, which should get a dusting. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 6:15 a.m., high tide at 12:18 p.m., low tide again at 6:45 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 47 degrees, and whoever went down to the USGS sensor in Skodak and kicked it over, thank you. Sunset today will be at 4:22 p.m., and sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:42 a.m. Looking way up, we see an incoming solar wind could graze Earth on Wednesday. Solar wind speed is currently 316 kilometers per second at 11.9 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently poor for daytime and fair for nighttime. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 1, quiet. The current sunspot number is 23. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Wendy Schmaltz of Claverick, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
KZMB, All Zombie Radio.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
We must accelerate climate action to keep alive the goal of limiting global temperature rise to 1.5 degrees. It's time to go into emergency mode.
COP26 closed with UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres hailing the compromise it reached. About 200 countries adopted the Glasgow Climate Pact. They plan to return next year with updates on emission cuts by 2030 and climate financing for developing nations. President of the summit, Alex Sharma of Britain, was troubled that the agreement pledged to phase down coal, not phase it out, after opposition from China and India.
To all delegates, I apologize for the way this process has unfolded, I'm deeply sorry. I also understand the deep disappointment, but I think, as you have noted, it's also vital that we protect this package.
Back here in the States, New York Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and other progressives argue the plan is not ambitious enough.
I don't think it's sunk in for a lot of people. A lot of people may not know this. We're living our day-to-day lives, but the stakes here are really huge.
Republicans question the agreement's impact on energy sector jobs with a move away from fossil fuels. Environmental groups are blasting a Biden administration plan to auction drilling rights in the Gulf of Mexico. Oil companies can bid Wednesday on nearly 80 million acres of federal waters that could produce a billion barrels of oil over 50 years. Opponents say Biden is breaking his pledge to ban new oil and gas leasing on public lands. Vice President Kamala Harris wrapped up a trip to Paris by placing flowers at a memorial to victims of a terror attack. She said the partnership between U.S. and France remains strong.
This trip was about, of course, making clear the long-standing relationship, but also that as we go into a new era for the world, that our work will continue, and we do it with a sense of optimism.
Harris sought to mend relations wounded when a submarine deal with Australia sidelined a prior deal with France. President Joe Biden will sign the $1.2 trillion bipartisan infrastructure bill today. 13 House Republicans joined most Democrats to pass the bill, while 6 Democrats and 200 Republicans were opposed. Utah Republican Senator Mitt Romney, who helped negotiate the measure, weighed in on the lack of GOP support.
Some people thought, well, President Biden said he wanted to do something on a bipartisan basis. And so when we did something on a bipartisan basis, why, it looks like a victory for him. And some good Republicans say, I don't want to give him a victory.
Congress returns from break this week with the House focused on passing Biden's safety net, climate and tax package. The Senate will shift its attention to the long overdue National Defense Authorization Act. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy online at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to The Morning Show on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Welcome to Hudson Valley Word of Mouth. I'm your host, Julia Jorn, and I live and work in Round Top in beautiful Greene County. Come along with me as I meander through the Hudson Valley, the Northern Catskills, the Capital Region, and beyond to interview the people behind the special spots and hidden gems that make our area of New York State and our collective community both distinct and diverse. You'll likely discover that you don't have to travel too far to pay them a visit. They may already be in your own backyard or just around the corner. And I'll bet their place might turn out to be that one certain destination you keep meaning to check out. So I'm here to remind you, put it on your list. Together we'll meet shop owners and small business owners, curators, designers, and artists, chefs, farmers, and culinary experts, and other creative entrepreneurs. We'll hear their own personal stories, learn about their unique offerings, and hit them up for their own local recommendations. Thanks for listening. Today I'm in Catskill in the studio of artist Tristan Fitch. A self-taught painter and sculptor, his works are both architectural and abstract, whether it's a large-scale canvas layered with paint to create a non-representational landscape, or brightly colored folly-like geometric objects that playfully exist in nature. Tristan's work has been exhibited around the Catskills and Hudson Valley, including places like Catspan Cultural Park in Tivoli, Lab Space in Hillsdale, and the Green County Council on the Arts, now known as CREATE, as well as Hilo and Catterskill Market, all on Main Street in Catskill. So to start, Tristan, what originally brought you to the Catskills?
Hello.
Hi.
I moved to New York City in 1990. And in 1992, I took a workshop at the Lexington House for actors, writers, and directors. I was an aspiring actor at the time.
And the Lexington House is actually in Lexington.
In Lexington. It's that old inn that is nestled on the Schoharie Creek, and then there's the little bridge that goes over the creek, and then Lexington House is right there. It's probably built in, I would say, the late 1800s, and it has that really cool big veranda porch that wraps around, and wood cornice molding, and it's really, really, really beautiful. And in the 90s, it was operated by the Ensemble Studio Theater.
And the Ensemble Studio Theater was both in New York and then would sort of hibernate up here to the Catskills?
Yep. They'd move their programming for the summer to the Lexington House. They owned the property there. And they did summer stock theater and also hosted a number of workshops that would go on during the entire summer for writers, directors, and actors. EST is a writer's theater. Arthur Miller, David Mamet, a lot of really wonderful writers came out of EST. They're still operating, they're still in the city, but they no longer own and operate the Lexington House.
Do you remember or know how long they were there and why they left?
In the early 90s, they acquired the property and they stopped when Kurt Dempster passed. He was the former director of EST in around the early 2000s.
It wasn't because the building needed repairs.
They never really used that inn as for the theater or to even house the actors. There are cabins up at the top of the hill, and then there's a staff house, and the current owners live in the staff house. And then there's a very cool old barn converted into a theater. And I'd say it's probably a 60 or 75 seat theater with a full on light and sound booth. Looking at it from the outside, you would never know there's a stage in there and seats in a theater with risers. And it's nestled up on a hill that's across the street from the Lexington House. So you can't see it from the road, the barn. And so that's where the theater is, and that's where we would perform. And I came up every summer from 1992 through around 2001 to do summer stock theater. And that's how I
got hooked
on the Catskills and eventually, you know, moved up here. But that place is, you know, near and dear to my heart. We used the fields to perform in, not only just the theater, do plays in the Schoharie Creek, little scenes. There was a river theater that has since fallen into the Schoharie Creek. It's no longer there.
Literally a river theater?
It was an old ice house, maybe. Wow. And they converted that into
a performance space.
They, you know, put chairs in there and would do plays and perform them for the local community there in Lexington. And so during the summertime, Lexington in the 90s had performances to go to, plays to go see right there, and great plays done by this very good theater, you know, in down in New York City.
What do you know about the current owners?
Young couple, a lot of energy and a lot of enthusiasm, and want to maintain the legacy. So they are starting with renovating the inn because that needs the most work, and they're converting the inn into a more of an exhibition space for art and installation work. So they just had this past summer their first group show, and I have a sculpture in there. To have performed and done theater there in the 90s, and then my last time on that property, I think, was in 2008. I never thought I would do anything there again.
Wow. That must be so nice to have it come full circle, to have been an actor there, and then now many years later to have your artwork exhibited there.
Something in the universe keeps bringing me back there.
Well, I can't wait to go back. The very first house I ever rented in the Catskills was in Lexington. Wow. So to get to this little tiny house in the middle of what I felt was middle of nowhere,
yeah,
I had to pass that building.
Right.
And at the time, it was at that point abandoned. Mm-hmm. They had, I guess, already,
yeah,
come and gone. I had just missed,
yeah,
that theater group.
Right.
And so every time I go past it now, I always think, what if someone were to make something great with it?
Yeah.
I never sort of imagined it ever becoming back to being an old hotel or an old inn. It would,
right,
just take too much work.
Yeah.
But as an actual place to do art exhibitions and theater performances, there's nothing else like it.
It oozes magic just looking,
yeah,
at it. And it has a little bit of a haunted feel.
Yeah, it's a little mysterious.
Yeah.
And just the way it's situated, like over the...
The creek. Yeah, it feels like it doesn't cantilever out over the creek, but it certainly, the porch goes right onto the banks.
So you've been exhibited in a number of group shows in the region, and in particular the Wasaic Project, where five of your outdoor sculptures have been on view now going on about 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about the Wasaic Project?
Mm-hmm. They are a residency program for emerging and mid-career artists, and they have housing on the premises there for artists to live, and it's in an old mill. The actual exhibition space where they do all their shows and performances is in a 7-story mill that's called Maxon Mills, and each floor, 7 floors, has a small exhibition space, some larger than others, and you climb an old staircase, winding staircase. It's kind of like a spiral staircase, but a little bit larger. So as you travel from one floor to the next, you encounter little nooks and crannies. The walls are wood plank walls, and some areas have little cutout boxes that artists will, you know, install little, you know, works,
teeny tiny works.
Yep. And then at the top, it opens up into a larger exhibition space. But super supportive, really wonderful place to nurture art and engage the local community of Wasaic. They have a lot going on. Their summer calendar is pretty jam-packed with the large group show that they do there annually. 40 artists exhibiting throughout the mill and then also outside on their grounds. The property goes right along the Metro North rail trail. And the sculptures that I have there now are along the rail trail. The first year that they were there, we installed them in the back. They have a big back field. There's horses that come out of the barn and feed in the grass there and interact with the sculptures, which is really cool to see. Yeah, they sent a picture one day to me of one of my sculptures with a horse right next to it. So that was pretty cool to
that
see.
That would not happen anywhere else. But
no,
Hudson
it's
Valley.
Super unique. Yeah, it's this a beautiful relationship between the art and the nature
and the architecture,
and the
sounds like.
It's the tallest structure for miles, so you can see it before you get into Wasaic. Really, really wonderful place. They have every Halloween the Haunted Hamlet Monsters Ball, which there's a parade that has floats in the parade, and the floats are designed and made and fabricated by artists. And
that's the ultimate kind of parade.
Yeah, yeah. It's
and
a
it's
curated,
for the town.
It's for the town, free to the public. Anybody can come, and the parade kind of wraps around, travels around the mill. And,
oh, man, artists must make the best floats.
Yeah, yeah. And they're all dressed up, and there's music, Yeah, it's pretty cool to see.
So besides the Wassaic Project, what are other art venues that you might recommend in the region, or anything mm-hmm. else that you're excited about? Doesn't have to be art.
This past summer, I went to Art Austerlitz for the first time. It's in an old church in Austerlitz, New York, which is on the east side of the Hudson River, just north of Hudson. It's a beautiful drive getting there. It's a small little chapel. Pews are still there. Altar, everything is in place. And
there. Do they still have services there?
They don't have services. And I believe that's why the director, Ryan Turley, proposed it. It's because the church wasn't being used. And so he thought, what a wonderful way to use this building as an art space. And so this past summer they had a number of shows. And as far as like things that stick out in my mind, Art Austerlitz is, I think, a really good new thing that's happening. Also T-Space.
I love T-Space.
And Rhinebeck. For the architecture lovers and art lovers, it's a little bit of both. And getting into the gallery space, there's a plank that you walk up, and it's in the woods.
Going to T-Space feels like going into a three-dimensional example of, I guess, the golden rectangle.
Oh, yeah.
But it feels like also just going into the most special treehouse.
Yeah.
You're really up there in the trees, and the natural light is so extraordinary.
Yeah.
And it's such a unique space. And I'm also a big fan of the architect who designed it, Stephen Hall, because I went to architecture school.
Yeah.
Many moons ago.
It's done very well. That's a beautiful place. Yeah. And then locally here, in being a resident of Catskill, Left Bank Ciders recently started a monthly reading series called Northern Spy Reading Series. And it's being a cider bar, they're calling it Poetry, Prose, and Fermented Fruit. Left Bank Ciders is just a great new spot to go and hang out with your friends in Catskill. And it's dog friendly. And another fun thing to do here at Avalon Lounge in Catskill, they are starting a story workshop, Story Slam, on the fly Story Slam. And that's, I think, the first Thursday of every month.
That's
and
when you get up and just tell a story?
On the fly. No. I think it's themed.
Kind of like the moth.
Right.
Moth storytelling, which I love.
Yeah.
I would be so shy to do it, but
yeah, I would too.
Tristan, I think we need to do it.
Yeah. I there's plenty of stories to be told.
Well, thank you so much for those recommendations.
Yeah.
All worth checking out.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to Hudson Valley Word of Mouth. If you're interested in checking out an ongoing list of local recommendations, or if you have recommendations of your own to share, go to my Instagram at Roundtop Recommends, or visit the Wave Farm website at wavefarm.org for the Hudson Valley Word of Mouth segment archives and how to reach me. Talk to you next time.
You're listening to 90.7. WGXC Acra,
Catskills.
Today,
East Durham. Next, we're going to hear from Matthew Shipp. The 2021 album is called Code Breaker, and this song is called Code Swing. Thank you. All right, about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I think it was Seth Meyers, I'm not sure which one, one of the late night comedians made one quick offhand joke about the vaccinated trying to attempt to get unvaccinated. And I have been obsessed with the idea since. I've been wondering why it's not already a thing. How is it possible in the year 2021, the late in the year 2021, that people aren't protesting at their local departments of health to get unvaccinated? Well, my dreams have come true. NBC News reports. About the TikTok video with hundreds of thousands of reviews from Dr. Carrie Madjev, explaining the ingredients in a bath to unvaccinate. You're supposed to bathe in baking soda and Epsom salts, she falsely claims. You know, which people do all the time. And there's never been a trace of this unvaccinates you before, but now in the year of 2021, Epsom salts are radiation detox. The story goes on. Bet Tonight Clay will reportedly add a quote major pull of poison, unquote. That's based on the mistaken idea that anti-vaccine communities, that toxins can be removed from the body with certain therapies. She then recommends adding a cup of borax, a cleaning agent that's been banned as a food additive by the Food and Drug Administration. And the reason to add the borax is, quote, to take the nanotechnologies out of you. So it gets the 5G out of you, the borax. If you want to remove the 5G from your system, if you're carrying your cell phone too close to your pocket, you want a cup of borax in a detox bath. Don't drink it, though. The FDA says it will kill you. But the experts, they say the bath won't work. You can't get unvaccinated. Quote, once you're injected, the life-saving vaccination process has already begun. You can't unring a bell. It's just not physically possible, unquote, said Angela Rasmussen, a virologist and adjunct professor at the University of Saskatchewan in Canada. Of course, long before COVID, anti-vaxxers have been taking detox remedies and regimens to rid their bodies of the stuff that's protecting them from chickenpox and rabies and the boogie-woogie flu. Many autistic children have been put in baths of varying weirdness to pull the alleged heavy metal poisoning of vaccines out of their bodies. This is, of course, not true. Of course, it goes back in history to the days of cupping. While the virologist Rasmussen says, once you get your vaccine for COVID-19, quote, the transaction process for the mRNA vaccine is fairly quick. Basically, by the time you get out to your car, sorry, the magic has already started, unquote, she said. And the disinformation scientists are also weighing in on the issue. Quote, this illustrates how these anti-vaccine communities are shifting and pushing these claims toward vaccinated people. Unquote, said Ciarán O'Connor, a disinformation researcher for the Institute for Strategic Dialogue, an anti-extremism nonprofit based in London. TikTok has taken down the video, but others have, of course, popped up.
Thank you.